Hello, welcome to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. Happy Dead Friday. Beautiful day out there. I hope you're all out enjoying it to the extent you can. Again, no emails. Remember, I'm here to answer questions that you all might have, but you don't appear to have any. The email, again, is commonlaw, one word, seven, and the letter B at gmail.com. So send me some questions, give me something else to talk about. Otherwise, we're just going to call this the Art Blathering On Hour because I'll just talk about what I want to. And I think today we'll stick to mundane topics like the filibuster, abortion, immigration, gun control. I don't know what we're going to touch on, but we've got a whole lot to talk about. But first, we're going to have today's useless trivia, the phrase in the limelight. Where this comes from is that there was a kind of light invented in the 1800s that involved heating a chunk of lime and to some temperature, and then it would put out a really bright beam of light. And it was actually bright enough that they could, for the first time, focus the beam of light or turn it into what we call a spotlight, and thus the phrase, you were in the limelight. That's where that comes from. And one more thing before the break, because I don't want to touch on it for too long, but I just can't help but really be happy that these voting machine companies are suing these people that were out there lying about their machines. It's defamation. It's called a false and defamatory statement of and concerning a person or a thing that is not true. And just imagine if you owned a business that was producing glucose monitoring devices and somebody was out there who had a huge press coverage who was saying your devices were not accurate. You would, of course, sue them immediately. So I'm glad that these guys have been sued, and they should be sued, and it should hopefully maybe teach everybody a lesson about talking about things that are just not true and you cannot prove. Anyway, with that, we'll go to a break. It's commonlaw7b@gmail.com, or Arthur Beislein, and we will start off with our next topic right after this break.
Hi, this is Brett Taylor with Taylor & Sons Chevrolet. Taylor & Sons attempts to offer our customers tremendous value in our sales and service departments. One of our best examples is Taylor & Sons' selection of new and pre-owned Chevrolet Equinoxes. The Equinox's all-wheel drive system is one of the best in class, offering four-season handling equivalent to traditional four-wheel drive models. The Equinox comes with tons of standard and available safety features, such as side blind zone alerts, rear park assist, and slow-speed pedestrian braking. Finally, the Equinox is affordable for a lot of budgets, with pre-owned models starting at $299 per month with $2,000 due at signing, plus taxes and fees on approved credit. All of Taylor & Sons' late model and new Chevrolet Equinoxes come with the security of the Taylor & Sons Powertrain Advantage, offering a 10-year or 150,000-mile powertrain warranty at no cost to you. You can view our entire selection of new and pre-owned Equinox models online at tschevy.com. There you will find multiple pictures, detailed descriptions, and clear transaction pricing for every vehicle in stock. For guest-focused service, a world-class facility, and value for your money, it's Taylor & Sons Chevrolet.
Hello, this is Nevin Neal, pastor of Bonners Ferry Baptist Church, and I have this question for you. In a world filled with so many ideas, theories, philosophies, and doctrines, how does a person determine what is true and what is false, what is right and what is wrong? I imagine most people at the end of the day have decided to rely upon their own reasoning as the final say-so. Yet the Bible cautions us against this method. Proverbs 3 verses 5 through 7 says, "Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes, fear the Lord, and depart from evil." Proverbs 16:25 says, "There is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death." I would like to encourage you today to trust the Bible. Trust the Word of God. God will never steer you wrong. If you'd like to contact us here at Bonners Ferry Baptist Church, you can reach us at 267-3746 or find us at bfbaptist.com.
I'm Tiffany. I have some tips for you on how to quit smoking like I did. First, I did some reading about it. I found a lot of great advice on how to quit smoking and picked out the ways I thought would work best for me. I started by setting a quit date. Then I threw out my ashtrays, lighters, and matches. I did other things too, like exercising more, and it worked. But I'd still get cravings, especially on long car rides. To help me with that, I put a picture of my mother in my car. She died of lung cancer from smoking cigarettes when I was only 16. Now I have a 16-year-old daughter. That picture of my mother reminds me that I don't want to miss all the things my daughter is going to do in her life, including turning 17.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
97.1 FM and 1450 AM, 1400 AM, North Idaho's radio.
Hello, welcome back to Common Law. This is Arthur Beislein. Again, if you have a question about something in the legal world, it's commonlaw7b@gmail.com. Shoot me an email and I'll address it on the next show. The intro music there is from Bruce Springsteen's Oscar-winning song, Philadelphia. I thought it was appropriate because it's kind of about the Constitution. And I couldn't find a Grateful Dead song that had enough of a musical intro to use, so I went with that one. I want to start today by reading you something, and these are not my words. They're written in somewhat flowery language, for lack of a better term, but they seem particularly prophetic. And if I think if you listen carefully, you'll see what I mean. We are not always sure that those who advocate the truth are influenced by purer principles than their antagonists. Ambition, avarice, personal animosity, party opposition, and many other motives not more laudable than these are apt to operate as well upon those who support as those who oppose the right side of a question. Were there not even these inducements to moderation, nothing could be more ill-judged than the intolerant spirit which has, at all times, characterized political parties. For in politics, as in religion, it is equally absurd to aim at making proselytes by fire and sword. Heresies in either can rarely be cured by persecution. And yet, however, just these sentiments will be allowed to be, we have already sufficient indications that it will happen in this, as in all former cases of great national discussion. A torrent of angry and malignant passions will be let loose. To judge from the conduct of the opposite parties, we shall be led to conclude that they will mutually hope to evince their justness of their opinions and to increase the number of their converts by the loudness of their declamations and the bitterness of their invectives. An enlightened zeal for the energy and efficiency of government will be stigmatized as the offspring of a temper fond of despotic power and hostile to the principles of liberty. An over-scrupulous jealousy of danger to the rights of the people, which is more commonly the fault of the head than of the heart, will be represented as mere pretense and artifice, the stale bait for popularity at the expense of the public good. It will be forgotten, on the one hand, that jealousy is the usual concomitant of love and that noble enthusiasm of liberty is apt to be infected with a spirit of narrow and illiberal distrust. On the other hand, it will be equally forgotten that the vigor of government is essential to the security of liberty, that in the contemplation of a sound and well-informed judgment, their interest can never be separated, and that a dangerous ambition more often lurks behind specious mask of zeal for the rights of the people, that under the forbidden appearance of zeal for the rights of the people and for the firmness and efficiency of government, history will teach us that the former has been a much more certain road to the introduction of despotism than the latter. And that those men who have overturned the liberties of republics, the greatest number have begun their career by paying an obscure court to the people, commencing demagogues and ending tyrants. Now, that seems to fit what we see here. That's the opinion of the political parties. That's what's going on. Each side's trying to demonize the other. Each side is trying to say they are the only guardians of liberty. And that's really what that little passage I just read you says, and it was written by a guy named Alexander Hamilton about 230 years ago or so. To me, it just fits with what's wrong with what's our country, and that's the political parties. And that's not a very good segue, but it segue into this filibuster talk. I've talked about the filibuster before. Just a quick reminder, what the filibuster is was when the Senate believed in endless debate. So if somebody didn't want anything to ever get voted on, they'd stand up there and talk forever. Well, to stop that, they passed a law that said you had to have 60 votes to stop debate and vote. So now you're hearing about, I bring it up again, because now you hear President Biden talking about reviving the speaking filibuster. And I personally love the idea of watching Tippy the Turtle, I mean Mitch McConnell, try to stand up there for 12 hours at the podium and talk. But that's not really the solution. Why don't they just pass a rule of procedure that says we can end debate at 50 votes? I mean, this shouldn't even be a debate. The only justification that anybody ever gives you for the filibuster is to protect the rights of the minority. And you're going, what minority? The minority political party. When did we start protecting minority political parties? We don't do that. I mean, political parties not even in the Constitution. We protect classes of people, for example, by race, but not political parties. So what do they, maybe they really mean is if the minority political party is the representatives of people, then they are the minority. Okay, well, let's give you that. But do we need that in the Senate or the House? No, we don't. Why don't we need that? Because when the executive branch gets together with the legislative branch, or as we collectively refer to them in my business, the mob, when the mob gets together and they write laws that infringe on the fundamental rights of minorities, then the judicial system throws that law out. That is how your rights or your minorities are protected. It's called the counter-majoritarian difficulty. It's what makes people really mad when they see, you know, judges and courts throwing out laws because they're not constitutional. It's like, well, the majority wanted them. Yeah, well, we've decided that the majority doesn't get to do whatever they want. There are limits on what they can do. So, in essence, the filibuster is just an additional check and balance, and it is exactly the reason that nothing ever gets accomplished in Congress. And I had the same opinion about it when Trump and the Republicans were completely in charge, and I have the same opinion about it now. That, yes, if the Democrats get rid of it, then when the Republicans ever have the Senate again, they're going to ride roughshod too. Well, that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to vote. They're supposed to do things. And then when they do things, you can evaluate if you like what they did. And if they don't ever do anything, which is the only thing they really do is vote, then you have nothing to base your vote on. So the filibuster absolutely needs to go. And I don't care what side of the debate you are, right wing, left wing, whatever. Everybody has to support this. And you should all call your senator, your congressman, whoever, and say, this needs to stop. You know, do your job and vote. So anyway, I just thought it'd be appropriate to talk about it again because they dance around it all the time, but nobody ever just says, well, wait a minute, how can you create a supermajority requirement when the Constitution doesn't even contain that? And they can't, but they do it anyway. So the next topic is, I want to clarify something for you people that are anti-abortion activists out there, just to make sure you understand, because I've heard a lot of misconceptions about what repealing Roe versus Wade would mean. Repealing Roe versus Wade does not mean that the federal government can outlaw abortion. It doesn't mean that, okay? And it could never mean that. They could maybe try to do that by way of interstate commerce, but meaning that if your medical supplies that you're using to conduct these things are crossing state lines and they can regulate it, that's where they can jump in. Well, the stuff you need, that wouldn't work. So, no, the feds can't outlaw abortion. What repealing Roe versus Wade would mean is that any individual state could outlaw abortion. And we know a lot of states would. And we know a lot of states would not. So what does that create? Well, it creates basically medical tourism within the United States. So if you're in a state that doesn't allow them and you want one, you're going to go to California, New York, whoever has them, and that's where you're going to go. So what's that going to create? And maybe you think it's fine, but it's just something to think about, is so the only people having unwanted children will be the people who are too poor to travel to California. That didn't seem like a good idea to me, but I just wanted to clarify that because it's a common misconception that somehow repealing Roe versus Wade would be this huge victory for anti-abortion people, and well, it would be in certain states, but in certain states it wouldn't. So just to make that clear. And the next thing we should talk about is I want to talk about in criminal law, which I haven't really touched on, and I think I got about 4 minutes, I can start it, but every crime has what we call elements, meaning what the state must prove in order to convict you of a crime. And usually the elements combine of what we call an actus reus, which is Latin for an act, and a mens rea, which is Latin for a thought. Meaning you have to have a bad thought combined with an act. And like elements of burglary are entering a building at night with the intention of robbing it. So the act is entering the building and the necessary intent is to rob. That then you're guilty of burglary. What is not part of proving a case for burglary is motivation. And motivation is quite often, I'm not sure I'm aware of any crime where motivation is actually an element. But we all hear a lot about it. I mean, why? Well, because, you know, you've heard it. Why would this person do this? This doesn't make any sense. Well, if you give them a reason why they would do it, example, my wife kills me because I have $500,000 life insurance policy. Well, that explains it. You know, motive is a good thing. If you can prove it, it's not necessary, but it's something that really helps your case. So why do I bring up motive? Well, I bring up motive because, again, when I listen to all these wacko conspiracy theories about the government creating the pandemic and making it worse than it is to why? What's the end game there? I mean, what would be the point? I mean, really, I mean, you say that's a really bad thing for them to do. Well, they got to have some motivation for it. And, well, they want to control us. Well, why? If you want to control the people and be in charge, tanking the economy is not the way to do it. You can ask President Trump about that. If the economy tanks, well, you lose. He'd probably still be president, but for the pandemic. And the other thing I hear is, well, they want to test facial recognition software on us in a mask, which is ludicrous. Casinos have had facial recognition software that can recognize your eyes for a couple of decades at least. And so I just bring it up because when you start listening to this rubbish that's out there on all these various media sites and it's complete nonsense, you got to ask yourself why. You know, even if that's true, why would they do it? And if you can't figure out why they're doing it, then it's probably not true. The pandemic is the very best example I can think of. But anyway, that brings us up probably to our next break, or pretty close. This is Common Law. I'm Arthur Beislein, commonlaw7b@gmail.com. Somebody send me an email. At least send me an email so I know somebody's listening. But I would hate to have to start being more controversial just to get people to react so I know somebody's out there. Anyway, we'll be back after the break.
Did you know properly stored, freeze-dried food has a shelf life of up to 25 years? Pro-X Home Decor Center has Harvest-Right freeze dryers in stock now. These simple-to-use machines will help you preserve 97% of your food's nutrients, all with the push of a button. Come see their demo model today. Also check out their wide array of quality custom cabinets. Let them help you design the kitchen of your dreams. Pro-X Home Center, just north of Bonner's Ferry, your hometown everything store.
Oh, I love family road trips. The wind in my ears, the treats in my mouth, and peace of mind knowing we got a free safety check at Les Schwab Tires. Like Les Schwab, my family's safety is my first priority. Well, that and squeaky toys.
During the Les Schwab Spring Tire Sale, save up to $200 when you bundle select tires, wheels, and brakes. Les Schwab Tires. Limited time offer while supplies last. Actual discount amount depends on tire and wheel size and type. Cannot be combined with other offers. Exclusions apply. Details at leschwab.com.
Hi, this is Jim Pierce for Pierce Auto Center in Sagal, Idaho. We're just a couple minutes south of Sandpoint on Highway 95. Dodge, Jeep, Chrysler, and Ram, one big location right on Highway 95. Our goal at Pierce Auto Center is to earn your business one customer at a time. Pierce Auto Center is a family-owned business. We're offering full parts, full service, master technicians, plus a large inventory of new and used vehicles, fully reconditioned, waiting for you and your family. Give us a call at 263-4212. And remember, if you make that drive, I'll make the deal.
Accidents happen, but your P1FCU debit account can help you pick up the pieces. P1FCU Perks, powered by Bazing, offers cell phone protection up to two $400 claims per year. Does your debit card do that? Just pay your cell phone bill from your Preferred or Power Plus debit account and you're covered. P1FCU, a Pacific Northwest original since 1938. Only available with P1FCU Preferred or Power Plus debit accounts. Insured by NCUA.
Being a teenager is tough. There's the constant pressure to be liked.
Endless worrying about college.
Cyberbullying, high expectations, all the negativity.
There's no question. Being a teenager is tough. And what do Idaho's teens do when they want to block out the noise and clear their heads?
We play! Yeah!
Research shows that teenagers who participate in high school sports have lower stress levels, more confidence, and greater self-esteem. And then there's the biggest benefit of all.
High school sports are fun.
Not just fun.
They're a lot of fun.
Encourage your teenagers to participate in a sport or activity when they go to high school. They'll stress less and smile more. And they'll be laying the foundation for a happier, healthier future.
This message presented by the Idaho High School Activities Association and the Idaho Athletic Administrators Association.
Missed a noon hour? Check out the audio at our new website, NorthIdahoRadio.com.
Welcome back to Common Law. I'm Arthur Beislein. The email, if you have a question, is commonlaw7@gmail.com. Before I move on to my next topic, it's also about criminal law. I don't know about anybody else out there in Radio Land, but to me, the traffic flow in our little town is looks like it was designed by somebody with a really sick sense of humor. But that's just me. But here's the deal. If you agree, here's what's going on is I've won't get into it too much because I can go on and on about this. I've been absolutely, I guess, in a rage against the Department of Transportation ever since I heard that they weren't going to turn over our city streets until they built something called the Curve, which is great. I thought it was a fine project, but it had nothing to do with changing the traffic flow immediately to get that three lanes of whatever out of our middle of our downtown shopping district. But I learned then and there during this last, well, I guess that would have been about 2013 or 14, that nobody thinks there's anything you can do about the Department of Transportation and that they can do whatever they want. Well, they cannot. I hear this from the city. I hear it from anybody who I, business owners, I'm like, do you think this is a good plan, what they're doing? No, everybody thinks it's really a bad idea. It's very dangerous. But there is something you can do. The DOT has a standard. You know, they have to balance what they're trying to accomplish, which is moving things around the state, with the impact that they have on any particular town that they're going through, or any county, or any other place. They can't just do whatever they want. That's what, for me, it just seemed weird for people to even think that they just can't do it. They can do only what is reasonable and rational and makes sense. And I just tell you because if you don't like the traffic pattern like me, you need to tell the city to do something about it. Because I don't own a business on any of these streets. I'm not even sure I would have what we call standing to do anything about it, which means I got to have a dog in a fight. But the city would. You know, just one example and then I'll move on. But the light at the Chevron there, as you're heading west on Cedar Street, you know, I think we all agree that about 99% of us want to go right from Cedar on to 5th and head north. And a lot less people want to go straight down Cedar. And you know, more might want to turn left. Well, it used to be that the right lane was right turn only, and then the center lane was straight or left. Well, now it's swapped. So the right lane is straight or right, and the center lane is left turn only. Well, what that does is if there's one guy at the front of the line who wants to go straight, well, then the traffic backs up all the way across 4th Street. And it does it in the winter, it does it in the summer, it's way worse in the winter, in the summer. I've seen it, you know, back across 3rd Street. Well, then you leave a gap, cars are trying to jump in between the gap, going on cross traffic, bikes, pedestrians. And I'll just tell you, I called the DOT and I talked to the engineers and I said, why is it this way? And they said, well, that's the way the city wanted it. And I called the city and they said, no, the DOT, that's their light, we can't do anything about it. It's like, well, he went that way. You know, do you walk to work or do you carry a lunch? So tell your city, if you don't like the way traffic is moving, that there's something they can do about it. I'll do it for free if they'll just get behind me to do it. Something has to change. I got a lot of ideas. I won't throw all those out right now. Anyway, let's go back to criminal law. Why are laws necessary? Well, they're necessary for the functioning of an organized society. Our legal system, for all our faults, is probably the most respected in the world. And how do we know that? Well, because everybody puts their money here. I don't invest in anything in Russia. I'm sure that most of you don't either. I don't invest in Mexico or pretty much anywhere else. And when we got downgraded, if you remember quite a few years back when we allowed ourselves to default on our debt and our Moody's or whatever rating went down, which means our interest rates go up, everybody pumped their money here because interest rates went up. They're not worried about us. So, I mean, the stability of our government and the stability of our legal system is one of the main pillars of our entire society. And that's why when these idiots storming the Capitol, making us look unstable, well, that's anti-American. You make us look unstable, you hurt us in financial markets, you know, you're not a patriot, you're a moron. So stable legal system, the other pillar, in my opinion, I think there's a lot of other really important things, education, that kind of thing, but the military. I mean, if you don't have the military and you don't have a secure legal system, we have a whole different country. And granted, a lot of our security comes from where we are, which is not in Europe, not in Asia, not in East Asia, you know, not in any of those places. We're in Northern Hemisphere, and we've got Canadians to the north and Mexicans to the south. So it's, you know, a pretty secure place. I think it'd be pretty tricky to invade, but you still need to make sure nobody ever tries it. So laws are about stability, and stability is, the economy is about stability. That's why Wall Street gave Biden 5 times more money than Trump, when you'd think it would be the opposite, that the fat cats would like their tax breaks and want more. Well, no, what they want is stability, and Trump was chaos. You know, whether he had the right idea or not, whatever, but he didn't, you know, the way he approached it created chaos, and that's not good for anybody or anything. So back to laws being necessary for an organized society, what that means is no law should exist unless the benefit of the law outweighs the costs of the law, without exception. And where do you often, well, always, see this cost-benefit analysis not being engaged in? Moral laws. And the one that we'll just jump into is the war on drugs. Regulating morals has no place in the law unless there's a net benefit to doing so. And you say, well, wait a minute, you know, drug use is bad. It's a drag on society. It destroys families. It's a drag on productivity. Yes, all these things are true. That's in the bad column. Gotcha. Now, let's go to the other side. What do we got on the other side? Well, we have a huge black market with criminals who are not even very brave. Because, you know, it takes some guts to break into somebody's house, especially here, you're going to get shot. But, you know, selling something out of your basement, and it's a very private thing, that's, you know, easy to do. Creates a giant black market and lots of violence associated with that. And it's not because, you know, the cartels aren't killing each other because they're on drugs. They're killing each other because we're on drugs. And if you want to put them out of business, then you decriminalize any kind of recreational substance that anybody wants to do. Oh my God, no, we can't. No, what about meth? Meth wouldn't even exist. It wouldn't even exist if there wasn't this war on drugs. Do you think Johnny in the basement mixing up the medicine can compete with Dow Chemical? No. No chance. They'd all go out of business immediately. And it would, you know, you'd actually have to address the fact that by doing this, you would take down $1 trillion over economy overnight. You had a lot of people that are willing to violate very serious laws with no way to make money now. You know, that would be the, but that's certainly not a reason to keep it illegal. I mean, the war on drugs is just a real big version of prohibition. And so when you ask people, well, you think all these things should be illegal, but alcohol's fine. Well, yeah, prohibition was a bad idea. Well, yeah, it was a bad idea, and it still is a bad idea. It's just, it's like they check their brain at the door because they think that if you decriminalize something, you're endorsing it. So, yeah, you got the black market, you got a huge trade, you got a lot of violence. What else do you have? Well, you have people going to prison for twice as long as rapists, destroying their family, hurting their economies that they work for, whether they're employers or employees or who they are. Then you have all the costs of the police all the way up to the prison warden and the probation people and the parole people and all these people that are wasting all this money to try to regulate somebody's morals. You know, and take half of that money and put it into one, honest education and rehab facilities. I mean, nobody wants to be a junkie. You're going to be way better off. Just trying to outlaw, it's not going to work. It's impossible to outlaw it. And that, you know, but you say this, you're a druggie. It's like, no, I'm just thinking. And this doesn't make any sense, what we're doing. And everybody knows it doesn't make any sense. I mean, think about it. If you decriminalize anything that was just purely a fun thing to ingest, well, the companies would come up with all kinds of neat things that didn't give you a hangover, didn't get you addicted. You could come home and do whatever you wanted and be fine the next day. And the other thing they could also do is they can stick markers in these things, meaning that if we find a kid who's dead from heroin and we can identify who put it into the stream of commerce where you're hammered, then we'll have plenty of room for you in the prisons because we won't be filling it up with people who would probably be in rehab facilities, better use of your money. So that's what I mean, it's something that people really have to look hard at. And, you know, that kind of nice little segue into my next topic about your fiscally conservative state of Idaho. Now, what's that mean, fiscal conservatism? It means don't waste the taxpayers' money. That's what it really means. You know, don't just blow money doing stupid things. Right off the bat, you're going, well, okay, using your legislative time that we're paying you for to pass a law that says you don't have to listen to federal courts, that's a waste of time and it's grandstanding. That's a huge waste of money. But here's what is a bigger waste of money. Wasting time trying to pass a constitutional amendment saying Idaho will never decriminalize marijuana. So let's break that one down here. So we're surrounded on all sides by states that are either recreational use, a country that's recreational use, or states that are medical use on all sides. This includes Utah, our extraordinarily liberal friends to the south. And Ontario, Oregon, which is right across the border from, you know, southern Idaho, Boise, kind of a straight shot on the freeway there, has some of the highest, well, has the highest per capita tax revenue from marijuana sales. But it's really nobody really there. Well, they're all coming from Boise. Then here, everybody's going to Washington. You know, you go wherever the closest cane, and everybody's going in to buying it. So what are we doing? We're sending our tax dollars across state lines. They're spending their money there. They're getting all the benefit of the tax dollars. They're bringing the stuff back here. We're wasting tax dollars, still trying to fight a war we can't win. For what reason? Seriously, what reason? Because we don't think people should be smoking ganja? Well, they sure as a heck shouldn't be drinking. And, you know, but who makes all the money? Oh, yeah, that's right. The state of Idaho makes all the money off the sale of liquor. Well, and the restaurants. But, you know, they got their fingers in the pie. They could have their fingers in this pie. So drugs are something that need to be addressed. The criminal law system is not the way to do it. With that, we'll go to our last break, and I'll thumb through these pages of things to see what we can talk about for the last 10 minutes. Again, Arthur Beislein, Common Law, number 7, letter B at gmail.com. Please send me an email. We'll be right back.
Now is the time to gear up and get those spring projects together. Let Thick and Thin Beams of Bonner's Ferry, your hometown sawmill, help you. Spruce up your home with new flooring, a decorative mantle or desktop, or beams up to 44 feet long. Just about anything you can dream up, the guys at TNT can help design. Be sure to check with Thick and Thin Lumber first for all of your wood product needs. For fast, reliable service and competitive prices, come see the mill at 4355 Cow Creek Road or check out their website, tntbeams.com.
This is Eve Knudsen from Knudsen Chevrolet. Celebrate Knudsen's spring savings with a new 2021 Chevy all-wheel drive Trax. Save 28% off MSRP and buy this one now for only $16,987. Or what about a new 2021 Chevy Equinox all-wheel drive for only $21,477? That's 28% off MSRP as well. Prices are plus tax and fees after rebates. These are former service loaners. You must be a current owner or lessee of a 2007 or newer non-GM car or truck to qualify for purchase. Test drive our new online shopping experience with ShopClickDrive at Knudsen.com. Experience our commitment to your safety and security with vehicle pickup and delivery at your home or office for service appointments or test drives. Find new roads at Knudsen Chevrolet, minutes west of Coeur d'Alene, just a short drive east of Spokane at 1900 East Polston Avenue, Post Falls. Knudsen Chevrolet, hard to say, easy to save.
Need groceries but don't have time to shop? The folks at Super One in Sandpoint say, save time, shop online. It's easy and convenient. Just go to superonefoods.net, place your order, and set the time that you'd like to pick it up. A Super One personal shopper will have your groceries ready for you and will bring them out to you at one of the parking spaces reserved just for online customers. It's that simple. Try it today. Go to superonefoods.net for online shopping for Super One in Sandpoint. Save time. Shop online.
At Social Security, we are always thinking of ways to save you time and make things easier. That's why we created My Social Security. Opening a My Social Security account gives you secure access to your personal record and interactive tools tailored for you. You can see if you are eligible to receive benefits, view spousal benefit estimates, and compare retirement benefit estimates at different ages or dates when you want to start receiving benefits. Already receiving benefits? Use your account to change your address, set up or change direct deposit, get a proof of income letter, and more. In most states, you can also request a replacement Social Security card. Save time. Go online. Open a My Social Security account at ssa.gov/myaccount. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
KSPT, KBFI, North Idaho's radio.
Welcome back to Common Law. I'm Arthur Beislein, your host. My email is commonlaw7b@gmail.com. I think I've said that more times today than I've said it in the first six shows or however many I've done now. So I guess I'm getting desperate. Somebody send me an email. I mean, something. Come on. And before I go any further, and I'm not in any way affiliated with the guy or have anything to do with him, but your attorney general in your state's a guy named Lance Wasdin. And he's a Republican, and he is the guy for the job. If anybody runs against him, vote for him. He is the absolutely most apolitical attorney general I've ever seen. He's the one who's always telling the legislature, don't try to pass that law, you're wasting everybody's time, and then they do it anyway. So vote for Lance Wasdin. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to do that, but I'm not selling anything, so I think it's okay. When we left, we were talking about controlled substances. So let's talk about what another thing that I kind of view. I always thought, why do you call them a controlled substance if you stick them in the black market? Isn't that by definition not a controlled substance? I mean, that's how I would see it. But I kind of relate it the same way I do to the problem with the immigration. It's not really a problem with immigration, folks. It's a problem with our border and our processing. Immigration is a good thing. It has to happen. You could talk to any economist in the entire United States, and they'll say it's essential. You could talk to your former president, and he'll tell you it's essential. He has a whole bunch of them who work for him. We need them. They're hard workers. Yes, there's some bad apples in the bunch, and there's bad apples in our bunch for sure, which is how I make my living with the bad apples. So what do we do about immigration? Well, what's the problem? I mean, why are they coming across the desert when they could, you know, we accept immigrants. It's not like we've said, no, you're not coming. So why are they in the desert? I don't know if any of you have ever been to the Sonoran Desert, but it is probably like the least hospitable place on the planet besides the bottom of the ocean. I mean, crossing that thing is a suicide mission. It's just freezing cold at night and hotter than blazes in the day. So why in the name of anything are they out there instead of just coming right up the Nogales Highway and going through the border? Well, because it takes too long to process them. Well, that's the problem. That is the issue. So I have a job creating solution to this, which is have more people to process them. We got a lot of people that are looking for work, apparently, and have them process these people. Because if you can process them in an amount of time where they don't feel like they're going to be stuck there for 2 years, then they're going to be on the Nogales Highway. And the only people in the desert are going to be the bad guys, the people who don't want to be screened. Those are the people who will go across the Sonoran Desert. So that is really the solution to immigration. It's not, immigration is not a problem. It's how we're handling it that's a problem, which is so often the case. I know a lot of people who are from foreign countries who come here and they work really hard here and they stay here. And, you know, and Mexico would help us with this, as would these other countries, because most of these people come here, they work, they buy groceries, they, you know, contribute to our economy, but they send anything extra they have back to where they came from for the most part. So it would be in Mexico's best interest, it would be in all of our best interest to get together and control immigration as opposed to continue to pretend like it's not going to happen or we can somehow stop these people from coming. And yes, there's a lot more of them coming now, and yes, that's directly attributable to the fact that Trump is no longer the president. I mean, for anybody to say that's not the case, that's just undeniable. I wouldn't have come up here either, not knowing what he was going to do. You know, take my kids, separate me from them for months, maybe years. I wouldn't have come. But now they've got a guy there who's not going to do that, and so they're trying to get in, and we need to find a way to let them get in, effectively get in. And the other thing we could do, I was thinking about it, was if you vet them properly and you interview them, well, you can find out what they know how to do. The guy was a mason in Guatemala, and so he knows how to lay brick. Well, maybe you have a national database of, you know, maybe there's a guy up in Timbuktu who would really like to have a skilled laborer who knew how to do that, and then you give that person incentive to, you know, hire this person, get them set up, get them in the community, you know, almost be a mentor to these people, and then you also have somebody who's keeping an eye on them. You know, it's like, well, you're supposed to be working, and I haven't seen him in 5 days. And then when I did see him, he showed up and he was loaded. You've got somebody to keep eyes on him also, which, you know, I don't think they should have any more eyes on him than any of the rest of us do. But if I showed up to my office drunk, I'd expect you to tell my wife. That's kind of the way it works. So that's what we need to do about immigration, is just spend the money, because you get a great rate of return on it. Ask anybody who owns a restaurant. Ask anybody who's trying to find anybody to do anything around here right now, and nobody will. And I don't know why that is, but it was that way before the pandemic. It was, I mean, now I'm going to sound old. Well, back when I was a kid, we all wanted a job, blah, blah, blah. Well, we did. We all wanted a job. If you can get a job out in Hope working at a restaurant on the water, I mean, that was golden, man. You were set up. It was, you had a job. And now, like that little cafe out at the Hope Marina that's always been so good for breakfast. Well, it hasn't been open for 2 years because they can't staff it. And which, again, you know, leads to a most likely thing you can point at with this problem would be the lack of any affordable housing in this area. I mean, there's just nothing you can rent that's not a complete dump, and even the complete dumps are $600 or $700 a month. If you go up to Canada, like if you go up to Lake Louise and you go to these really nice restaurants and they have all this staff and these kids, well, that's because they have basically staff housing that is part of your job. We give you a little efficiency, a little place to live. And so they can afford to live there and they can afford to staff all these restaurants. So anyway, that just makes me sound old, I know, back when I was a kid. But anyway, I think that probably is getting close to wrapping it up. I don't know what else I have to talk about. I have a lot of pages here, and I don't know what else I really can talk about. I just wish you guys would send me an email. I mean, you would think that one of you out there is having trouble with your landlord. One of you doesn't understand what your boss is doing. One of you wants to buy a piece of property, and you're wondering about this, that, or the other thing. I mean, I'm not giving you legal advice. Again, it wouldn't be legal advice, but I'm here to answer your questions. And I kind of thought that I'd get a lot more than this. Because when people who I do talk to who listen to the show, they say, well, I never knew that. I've never heard that before. And I was hoping that we'd get more. But, you know, there's endless things to talk about in this, and I'm happy to do it. Oh, before I forget, I'm going to try really hard to have a guest speaker next show in a month. And it's a lady named Mandy. I don't know. I've just known her for Mandy for so long. I forgot her last name. Anyway, what she does, she's a lawyer from California. And what she practices in is what we call free and appropriate education law, which is it's in our constitution that you have a right to an education. And believe it or not, sometimes school districts don't want to do what they really should be doing, you know, as far as helping kids that maybe have some special needs and maybe need a little extra attention. Well, they don't do it. And in Idaho, it's even worse. And, you know, they say it's a lack of funding, and that's a legitimate complaint. You know, a state like Texas, where they have astronomical property taxes but no income tax, well, rich places like Dallas, all their tax revenue doesn't just stay in Dallas for schools anyway. It gets spread out equally to the poor counties, the rich counties. They all get, you know, a fair share. It's not how it works in Idaho. In Idaho, Ada County has a huge tax base. They have much better schools. And, you know, that's not the way it should be. But what we call it FAPE, that's FAPE law, Free Appropriate Public Education. That basically is your right as a parent when dealing with the school district. And in Idaho, if you Google education lawyer, all you're going to find are lawyers that represent the school districts. None that represent the actual parents or the kids. There's nobody who advocates for them. And we had an issue with our kid with the Coeur d'Alene School District, and we brought up this lady to help us because my stepfather-in-law was a mediator with the Ninth Circuit, so he saw a lot of these because they're federal cases. And so he said, you need to hire this lady, and her name is Mandy Leigh, L-E-I-G-H. You need to hire her and bring her up. And it was the best thing I ever did. I'm a litigator, and just having somebody to advocate for my child instead of me was well worth the money. But the main point is, and what she can explain to you hopefully next time, is what are their obligations? I mean, can they just say, no, we're not doing that? You know, can they just say, well, we'll just graduate your kid early, which is what I see a lot of. They say, oh, I get to graduate early. I'm going, you're not even ready to be out of your sophomore year. You know, but they just matriculate them out and push them on down the road. But anyway, this has been Common Law 7B. @gmail.com. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. And again, next week, if you're interested in education law, if you think the district's not doing what they're supposed to, this is the show you want to listen to. Everybody have a great weekend. And happy Dead Friday.
K246EU, 1450KBFI, Bonners Ferry, 1400KSPT Sandpoint, and online at NorthIdahoRadio.com.